October 7th, incumbent Congressman Nick Begich visited the KUAC studios. Nick, what are your campaign plans between now and the election?
I won't be back in Alaska until Congress adjourns, which we hope will be October 14th, Saturday, October 14th. And then I'll spend the last 3 weeks in Alaska, and we have finalized our program to quite an extent. For example, on Sunday, October 15th, I'll have a fundraising banquet in Anchorage with Hal Boggs, the majority leader of the United States Congress, coming to Alaska. And then the next day, we'll go to Juneau, October 16th, and he'll be with me again. I'm sure the majority leader of Congress has never been in Juneau, Alaska. That'll be a first, as it was a first to bring the Speaker of the House, Carl Elbert, to Alaska 2 years ago. And then on Tuesday, we'll be in Ketchikan. Every night, we'll have a major banquet. During the day, we'll fill in many, many affairs, such as TV, radio, civic groups, high schools, and what have you. I will move from Ketchikan after Tuesday to Wrangell for luncheon Wednesday noon, to Petersburg Wednesday evening, back to Juneau and Skagway and Haines on Thursday, over to Sitka on Friday, back to Anchorage on Saturday, Sunday noon Cordova, Sunday evening Valdez, Monday Kodiak, and so forth. And there'll be 21 days of vigorous campaigning in about 26 different locations, and I intend to average between 6 and 10 public appearances or speeches a day on the average, I would say, so that we could cover roughly 200 and some speaking engagements.
When do you plan to return to Fairbanks?
It'll be around the 28th on the present schedule, and then I'll be alternating between Fairbanks and Anchorage quite often in the final, say, 7 or 8 days.
Congressman Begich, you mentioned one fundraising dinner that's to take place in Anchorage the 15th of October. Actually, how is your campaign being financed?
Well, we have had a couple events. For example, we had an event in Ketchikan where we made $1,010 as a potluck dinner. We make all of ours public. We have in all the previous campaigns. And that's a strange thing. We didn't wait for the law, you know, to come about. We've been doing this for a long time. I think it's necessary. I've authored the Ethics and Disclosure Bill in the Alaska State Senate. On 8 different occasions, it went to defeat, that I recall. And we still don't have one, but I've gone ahead and made my campaign expenditures public. And so, for example, Ketchikan was $110, $1,010. Sitka was $336. In addition to those events, this one coming up for Boggs, that's a fundraiser. We have a raffle going on, a $10 ticket. That's a fundraiser.
Now, you're referring to campaign receipts rather than campaign expenditures.
Both. We do both.
I see.
Yes. Oh, yes. We break out both. Airplane tickets, the whole works. Everything is, every penny is accounted for, along with the balances. Hopefully, there will be some balances. And, of course, if you recall, we had 3 major fundraisers a year ago at Senator Humphrey in Alaska to pay off a $34,000 debt. And we made it in 3 fundraisers in Alaska with Humphrey going to Juneau, Fairbanks, and Anchorage. And so these are the kinds of activities we have. We have a fundraiser in Fairbanks this evening at Eleanor Houts' house. And we hope to raise about $1,000 there. We have individual fundraising where we have our committee going around asking for donations in our name. And we do that. We've sent letters out to organizations, to individuals. We've done everything. It's the same. Money's difficult to raise regardless of who you are, whether you're ahead, behind, or whether you're incumbent or not. Still difficult to raise money.
Congressman Begich, during this political campaign, you and all other candidates for federal offices from Alaska have been limited to a total campaign expenditure of $35,000 within the state of Alaska. Has this affected your campaign in any way?
No, it's not quite. It's a maximum of about $51,000 per campaign. Primary, $51,000, $51,000 in the general. I say $51,000 plus. It was $50,000, but then there's a automatic escalator based on inflation. And when you figure that in, it comes to about $51,000, no more than $31,000, $52,000 roughly, no more than $31,000 approximately can go for TV and radio.
I see.
A maximum of 60% of the total that can go into radio and TV in each campaign. Then the newspapers and all the other kinds of advertising takes over the remainder of the budget. But there are a lot of areas not covered. such as individuals that may be working for you, airplane transportation, flyers, and so on, are not covered. So there's still a lot of areas that should be covered that are not covered, and really $100,000, even in the areas that are covered, $100,000 is a lot of money.
Now, if an individual pays for a political advertisement on your behalf, does this have to be included in this total amount spent in your campaign?
That's right, even if the other person pays. Of course, he may put the ad in and say, not sponsored by the candidate. Then we don't have to pay for it. It has to be a disclaimer of some kind. I don't know. I don't have the exact words for it.
Paid for by the Committee for Baggage, for example?
No. Any committee has to report, you see.
I see.
So I have to sign an authorization to the newspaper. Otherwise, they cannot accept the ad unless the disclaimer is put on the ad.
What is this money limitation based upon?
It's the based on population, so many cents per voter, and then there's a maximum. And as it turns out in our state, we reach the maximum because we cover the whole state, and almost everybody reaches the maximum, which is roughly 52,000, if I recall.
Congressman Begich, as of this date, this is October 7th, 1972, you have not come out in support of the Democratic candidate for president, Senator George McGovern. Do you have a statement you wish to make on that?
Oh, yes. I think that's been certainly misinterpreted in Alaska. Because the answer I have given and the answer I intend to continue to give is the same answer that the great late Senator Bob Bartlett made. And this is why some people in the news media, in the Anchorage area particularly, I may say, have not accepted this answer, because I've not answered the way they want to. First, I said, and this is the way Bartlett always said it, first, I have a job to do as an incumbent, aside from politics. I am the congressman until I am reelected or defeated, nor until the new man is sworn in. Let's put it precisely that way, until a new man is sworn in, or the present holder is sworn in, until I am re-sworn in. Let's hope that is the occasion. So I got a job to do, regardless of the campaign. Secondly, my second major obligation is to get reelected. And that comes ahead of everybody, for the simple reason, in politics that is, for the simple reason that I am the candidate. Third, I support our ticket. And that ticket, as I've said before, includes the House members in the Fairbanks area running, the Senate members in the state, regardless of where they are, includes the governor if he were up for election, and includes Senator McGovern and Shriver. That's the way I've said it. But it's in that order. First, my job as an incumbent. Second, my reelection. Third, reelecting the ticket. Now, people say, well, Then you're tying yourself to McGovern and so forth and all this. I said, listen, he's a Democrat. My party nominated him. I support the ticket. We have two great parties. I don't agree with everything Mr. McGovern has said. Neither, I'm sure, does anyone else agree with everything Mr. Nixon has done. After all, I'm sure they wouldn't want to support all the 13 vetoes that Mr. Nixon has had. And so I mean that when I say I support the ticket, I also want to say I want to support the House candidates and the state Senate candidates, in addition to our national ticket. I have not hesitated for that answer, but the thing they don't like is the fact that I put it in a 1-2-3 order. Well, that's too bad about those people. My obligation is first, and that's why I've not been campaigning even for myself. While we're in Congress, I have done what other candidates for public office from Alaska in former years have not done. I've remained back on the job, and this is a shock to some of these people. I've not come back to campaign. I just don't believe in that. Maybe I've taught government too long for the university. But you know, after 13 years teaching principles of government, I believe that is a basic principle. We have only one congressman. When that congressman leaves Washington, D.C., we don't have a congressman there. And I just don't think that's right. And I couldn't miss all these bills that just came up this past week, for example. The other night at 11 o'clock at night, we passed the highway bill. There was an extra $98 million for Alaska in that bill. Well, I couldn't leave before that's done. Why, they had 43 amendments to that bill. They were cutting out section after section. They could have cut out our section, too. And I'm just not going to allow that to happen. I'm going to be there. And I can assure you that most of my success has been due to the fact that I'm there, voting and helping other people with their programs, giving an attentive ear to other people, so that when I ask for help for Alaska, because I'm only one out of 435, I need a lot of help. And the only way I can get help and get a recognition
is to show that I want to be an active participant in the process of government. And Mr. Aspinall of the Interior Committee particularly notes that. He's one man that checks your role, he checks your attendance. When you come into a meeting, he marks it down, even though his secretary also marks it down. Every time you come in and leave that room, it's marked down. Now, that's the way he acts. People who work for his committee, who want to be a part of his committee, who are concerned about the Gateway Park for New York City, as I've gone there to see it, as I worked on that bill vigorously for behalf of Bill Ryan, who just died 2 weeks ago, that was his bill, as well as I worked for the San Francisco Gateway Park, I was there. It wasn't Alaska Park, that's true. But these men were there when I needed them on the Native Land Claims Bill. So you see, they were there last week when the Sitka Bill passed, the Sitka Monument, allowing 53 acres of land to be placed in the monument to allow the reconstruction of the Russian mission, where the last important Russian Tlingit battle took place in 1804. All of that to the tune of $692,000. That was passed. It wasn't passed in 6 years. It didn't even get a subcommittee in 6 years. I didn't have a chance to get it out here until about a month ago, and they said, what bills would you like to come out? You've been a good active member of this committee. We want to help. I said, the Sitka bill. Out it came. It came in record time. Came in 2 weeks. It went on the floor on the consent calendar with one objection and passed. They couldn't move that bill in 6 years from the subcommittee. So I'm just saying that if you want to work with the system, show that you want to be an active participant. They're going to be considerate of your programs. They may not always agree with you, but they're going to be considered, and they gave me the time of the day.
As effective as you feel you've been during the past 2 years, do you feel you'd be any more effective if we were to elect a Democratic administration in the office of president?
Oh, sure. I have had a few more things, more opportunities. I certainly would get more press releases. You know, they have a system. Some people don't know that's in Alaska. They always wonder, what the world? We always hear from one senator. How come we don't hear from the other one and from the House member? The name of the game is this, that if you're in the majority party, every major building that goes up or any major bid that is allowed by the government, that's granted by the government, the first release goes to the member of the party. He gets about a 6-hour advance on us. And that's why we don't bother you with all these building announcements and contract awards and what have you very often, because we don't get them first. And so, other than that, as somebody said, but do you don't have, as this morning's program showed at the State Chamber Convention, when a comment was made by another man running for this office, said, you don't have the door to the White House. I said, what's new? Wally Hickel didn't have the door to the White House either. He was trying to get in, and he quit in disgust. Well, where are the laws made? Not in the executive branch. We have three branches of government. And I found myself almost being carried away this morning and giving one of my basic lectures in government, in my 101 course that I taught at the university. The fact that the legislature makes the laws, Congress makes the laws. In fact, the House originates all revenue bills. And so, where is the power going to be on any legislation affecting Alaska? It's going to be in the U.S. House, in the U.S. Senate. Because they're democratically controlled, and I'm sure we're going to control the House come around this next election. And so we have controlled the committee system, and that's where we get these things done, in the bills. The president doesn't have the item veto power, so if I get the $98 million in for a highway needs in Alaska, he gets in the highway bill, he can't knock those out. He either accepts the entire bill or rejects it.
Congressman Begich, your voting record of 884 votes out of a possible one, or I should say 884 votes out of 888 possibilities, is pretty good testimony as far as an indication of your participation in federal government is concerned. But since you're in Washington all the time, don't you feel that by staying there you'd lose touch with Alaska?
Let's say this. When I heard that comment, it was made in various circles, I quickly had for this morning's chamber gathering, and I'll be using it from now on, and I'll be handing it out to the press in about 2 weeks when we get it all reproduced. We will have every day that I've traveled to Alaska, and I was amazed. I didn't realize that I had spent as much time as I did in Alaska. I have made 22 trips to Alaska as of October 7th. 22 trips. I have two remaining trips. One will be coming up here when I return after the 15th, and then one more in December. I will have made the allowable number 24 trips
What do you mean by an allowable member?
Each Congress member gets one trip per month to his furthest point. Anytime he drops off at another city, he pays for that out of his own pocket. And that usually averages about $100 a month when you call the extra stops I make. That comes out of my own pocket. It does not come out of the government's one trip a month. Now, I made 24 trips, which would be approximately a quarter of a million miles. Number one. Number two, and this is most amazing, as of October 7th, not counting the next 20 days I'll be spending in Alaska, I will have spent 125 days, and all that's documented, in Alaska. And then from the 15th on until, say, about the 10th of November will be 10, another 25 days will be about 150 days in 2 years. And I began to do some real figuring. You know what that means? It means that I have left Alaska on many trips on a Sunday night at 7 o'clock, getting to Seattle at 11:55, taking a 12:55 plane to Chicago, and getting there at 6:50 in the morning, and taking the flight 322 United from Chicago at 7 o'clock, arriving in Washington at 9:42, is what they say on their schedules. And then my car is there to pick me up. It takes me right in from National, which is downtown, to my committee meeting, arriving in my interior committee meeting, which usually begins at 10, but never gets started until 10:15. I am there at 10:10. I have traveled over around the clock on most of my trips to Alaska. On my weekends, on my vacations, I have spent in Alaska. And I begin to think that if there's one criticism I have to make of myself, it's the fact that I've not been home enough with my family. And so the other night, my secretary made this report to me, because I knew it was coming up in Alaska, and you just asked it too. So you're no different than many others who've asked, well, has he been in Alaska enough times? And I went to open house last Tuesday night to see where my seventh grader goes to school, and went through his whole class schedule, my wife and I, and then on Wednesday night I went to another schedule. I went to open house, the first time I've done that since I've been in public life in 10 years, and I have 6 children. And so I'm going to assure you that I'm going to take off a little more time, because Alaskans don't want to deprive me of even my vacations. I think they feel that I should have a vacation, and I think I should too. I don't think I should burn out this operation, even though I enjoy it. There have been times, like last Thanksgiving, right before Thanksgiving, I spent 4.5 days in Alaska. I went from Annette to Ketchikan to Wrangell to Petersburg to Juneau to Sitka to Anchorage to Fairbanks, from Fairbanks down to Kenai and back to Anchorage, 33 speeches in 4.5 days. Met hundreds of people in Alaska. That's the kind of schedule, and it's usually, my voice doesn't run out like it is now because of speaking. It runs out because of internal. I have a time schedule built in. And when I get real tired internally, after about 4 days, I lose my voice. But it's not, and then I know I must quit, and so I take a day off and completely rest. But I will never take charges that I heard. I even went to Kotzebue before, I forget, Nome last winter, and 20, 30 below. And the point I'm making is that as I will lay out the entire schedule every day since I've been in public office, and they'll see where they said, well, if he's on the floor that much, he can't be in committee meetings. So we have all the meetings. When I miss the committee meeting, there's a little notation telling you where I was. For example, I missed 17 out of about 60-some meetings of the Public Works Committee. Why? 13 of those 17, we were in the Native Land Claims, final days, in the Conference Committee, where we had to be all morning and all afternoon, every day. But it's all noted there. I missed one because I was in Texas reviewing the automatic welding procedures for the pipeline at the Houston Apollo Center, where Alaska gave a special contract to the Apollo team to evaluate the automatic welding for the pipeline. The other three trips, I was in Alaska. Everything's documented. I missed one meeting out of 59 meetings of Interior, which I made public this morning. Better than any member, including the chairman of the committee. You know the attendance of committee meetings usually is 25%. So I'm, in other words, I'm not going to accept that kind of accusation, which was on radio and by a candidate. We have it taped, we have it documented, and we asked the station to verify it. And I was accused of being a Tuesday, Thursday man. So I went to the Library of Congress and I said, give us the facts. They found out that during the past year, we met 35 Mondays. And I can't recall the exact votes, but if I recall, it was about 57 roll calls and 14 teller votes on Mondays. And if you figure out that we did not meet the first 4 Mondays because we weren't in session, because Congress is organizing at that time, and if you take the legal holidays, which all fall on Monday now, and take off the Christmas week and New Year's week, you'll find out we missed about 3 Mondays all last year. So I won't accept that. I think that if people think they're going to get the charge across, that first I spend too much time on the floor. That's an excuse. I never heard of that one before. The last congressman was present 37%. 37% of the time. And this little frail piece of paper that I have here will indicate that from the Congressional Quarterly. 37%. And yet you heard the news releases and you heard the TV releases and you thought all the time that our congressman was there. He wasn't there. But you didn't know it because the TV releases kept coming, the news releases kept coming. But when you're recorded, nobody can record that vote for you. You've got to be there. So my record indicates that every Monday to Friday, with the exception of one Monday when I was coming back from Russia with Governor Egan and Governor Evans on the inaugural trip of Alaska Airlines, I missed the one vote on that occasion on that Monday. But I've been there every Monday and every Friday, except those I was in Alaska. And so what I'm saying is that there's going to be times I'm going to miss, though. I'm not going to continue this perfect record. I know I can't because I'm going to be sick sometime. I'm human. It's like a machine. You're going to wear out some Friday. I'm going to have the flu. Everybody in America has flu sometimes. I may break my leg. Who knows? I broke it once before. I may break it again. Or with elderly parents and in-laws, I'm sure there'd be illness or death in the family, illness in my family with 6 children, catastrophes of all kinds bound to occur. But whenever I miss a vote, and this is going to be something new for Alaska representation, maybe this again is too much of principles that I taught in my government classes, I'm going to indicate where I would have, how I would have voted had I been there. And on every one of these 4 votes I missed, it's in the congressional record, where I, how I would have voted had I been there. So there's no doubt about my trying to duck a vote. I have never believed in that. I never did that in 8 years in the State Senate. I'm not going to do it now. And that's something, you know, some people say, my goodness, it's too perfect. Can't be. There must be something fishy about this whole operation. I said, that's right. It's fishy. There's 888 votes to check. And there's 884 that I actually voted, my own voice, or my own teller ballot with my name on it.
Now, how does this 99.55% participation compare with other members of Congress?
Well, I think it is, it could be the highest. And I say it could be because we do have one man by the name of Ken Heckler of West Virginia who just answered his 2,500th consecutive roll call. That doesn't include quorum calls, roll calls on bills. He doesn't answer all his quorum calls. I have included my 888 all calls. Quorum calls, which ask if you're there or not, and votes. I put the whole thing, because they're recorded as recorded votes, roll calls. And I put them all down. And we have another gentleman with also 100% on votes, but I'm not sure on quorum calls. So I stand right up there, I thought, somewhere around the top 3 or 4.
Congressman Begich, I'd like to ask your opinion of an event that's taking place on the Alaska political scene. Your opponent, Don Young, is, of course, backed by the Republican Party. And it's been observed that he has been put up to run against you as sort of a sacrificial lamb. Do you have any comments to make on that?
Well, I don't know what transpired at Mount McKinley when the Republican Party had their convention. I do know that there were many Republicans discouraging various individuals who may have had an interest in running. In fact, some of those people were asked and then by some Republicans, and then other Republicans discouraged them at that convention. I heard that one or two Republicans gave a strong testimonial on my behalf. They said I was a working member of our delegation, and I appreciate that. And so it's obvious that in this primary election that just transpired, that I did receive about 70% of the vote, and a large number of Republicans crossed over to vote for me. So maybe in the eyes of those Republicans who crossed over to vote for me, they would consider maybe Don in that light that you characterized, where the other Republicans strongly believe that he could become a viable candidate. And having served 6 years in the state Senate, and I know him, I have nothing I'm not criticizing him personally. I know his family. I've known his wife. I know he's a family man and what have you. If anybody wants to make a race of it, I was in the same position one time. I made the race of it. I worked at it. And money's always hard to get, as I said. I don't think this is anything different. Maybe somebody thought because you entered the race for the U.S. House, all of a sudden 50,000 drops from the sky. I'm going to let them find out that we stretch a dollar. We do a lot of things to save a dollar in the campaign. And we've come the hard way. We ran with about a $50,000 budget last time against something like $200,000 plus. So those are the breaks. I had one newspaper for me in the whole state. One newspaper for me. Every other paper against me. I didn't let that deter me. I kept going. And I won. And so what I'm saying is that, in a sense, nobody's a sacrificial lamb. Once you enter the race, and if you enter the race to win, you're a viable candidate. As far as I'm concerned, I am working harder in this campaign
Congressman,
than any campaign previous.
Congressman Begich, I'd like to shift the scene from Alaska to Washington. Do you feel that the Watergate affair will have any influence on President Nixon's campaign for re-election?
Oh, sure it will. I think all of these things. In fact, I call that, I'm sure you've heard of Mission Impossible. I call that Mission Incredible. The most incredible thing I've ever imagined. When Mr. Nixon, way back in those days, was way, way ahead in the points, totals, and to get connected with this kind of a thing, it was insulting to the American system, a fair play. Americans react to that. And I could see why he's trying to disavow any association with that affair. I would if I were in his position, too, because it's most incredible that you'd have it tied to the higher echelon. That's being tied right now. There's been some real revelations the last couple of days. You've heard one of the men turn FBI witness now because he said everybody's forsaken him. They've dropped him. I forgot his name. Is it Bevin? Or I don't recall. But he's now turned witness, according to the Washington Post 2 days ago. And so these kinds of things discredit an individual. I think on the minimum wage bill, the battle took place in Congress just recently. In the halls of Congress where the Republicans and Democrats were negotiating, in the same room were three or four major lobbyists. In the same room negotiating minimum wage. One was the president of McDonald's, hamburger. And he, Washington Post 2 days ago, in a front page story, indicated he contributed $247,000 to the campaign of the president. And I see these kinds of things don't do credit to the system. And so I would say all of these things are getting a lot of play out east. They don't seem to get quite as much play out in the west. Maybe because the Washington Post and the Washington Evening Star are close at hand. They're big papers. They're a million circulation for the Washington Post. So out east it is reportable. Because, as I said, it's most astounding. Mr. Nixon said in his press conference that his investigation of the Elder Hiss case was like a Sunday school operation compared to what the FBI did. He said there were 133 FBI men on this case, that they interviewed over 1,500 people, mind you, and the grand jury is ready to move, and you're going to see it. Now, gee, that's incredible. And they found it's a fact. There were five people who were bugging the interview. It was a fact that they were transmitting the message to Mr. Timmons of the White House staff. This case is going to be tried after the election, and I'm glad it is, in a sense, because I think we've got to put a stop to this kind of nonsense. I don't care if Democrats do it or Republicans do it. It's wrong. It's insulting to the democratic way of government. And I think a few more cases. The ITT case was a shambles. The shredding machine, shredding all the information of Dita Byrd. What a terrible thing. What a terrible thing.
Among members of the Washington congressional community, what is the general feeling about President Nixon's chances for re-election?
Generally, they think they are very, very good. And I think that, to be honest, you'd have to say that. George McGovern has an uphill battle. He's begun to close the gap. Whether he can close the gap fast enough is a question. I don't know. Hubert Humphrey almost closed the gap in the last 4 days. Most amazing thing. How long can President Nixon refuse to get into the battle debating? Mr. McGovern will be a question. How long can he take it not being involved? Because he's a fighter and a scrapper. He likes to get in there. He did it in the Voorhees case in 1946 in California. He did it in the Helen Gehagen race in 1948. He certainly tried it against Kennedy in 1960. Then he ran back for governor and they got beat badly and reacted in a fighting mood to the press after that. And so he has those temptations to get involved. Whether he has to, in the final analysis, is a question yet. We don't know. I do know that he's fortunate because an incumbent president has many cabinet members to go out and battle for him, and they're doing a good job in that regard. They're all over the country. He has, you can, in fact, get an interview with any of these men for any question. They're not there. They're all campaigning, all the cabinet officials. And you have the vice president taking a little higher road nowadays, thinking ahead to 76 when he might want to be a candidate himself, and all of a sudden he's a new Mr. Agnew. And so he's taking on Mr. McGovern. And so you see, you have advantages as an incumbent. But still, whether he can take the, as we call it in politics, the rib cutting, where McGovern is hitting right on that lower 15th, 14th rib, talking about Watergate time after time, talking about political contributions by high individuals in government, talking about softening of regulation toward certain companies at the last minute, talking about refusing to negotiate important contracts till after the election, affecting ITT and so forth. All these things are bothering him because he really, some of those cases I'm sure he has no association with. But, as John Kennedy said of Cuba, he made an error. He personally didn't make the error, but he is the president. And John Kennedy said, I am responsible for the Cuban fiasco, if you recall, the Bay of Pigs. He took the full responsibility. And so he set a tone in politics that would indicate to me, as a politician, that when you're the man in a congressional office, as I am, that if a letter goes out over my signature, and that some phrase in there written by a staff member was not as well written as it should be written, I am responsible because I read that letter when I went out, and I am in charge of the office. I am the candidate. I hold the office. Because a staff member may have made an error down the line, I can't blame the staff member. Who cares about the staff member? I am responsible. Mr. Nixon is responsible, just like President Kennedy was responsible. And so these are the facts of life. And so when I get to him, I think he's going to come out fighting. So it might be an interesting campaign yet. Don't underestimate the American public this year. Nobody can count what's going to happen. Strange year, indeed. Whoever thought a year ago that McGovern would be the candidate? I didn't. Be very honest about it. Neither did McGovern, maybe, with 6% of the vote, back in Florida. Look what happened to him.
Congressman Begich, thank you very much.